This podcast is sponsored by Lucy Pet and Equus Grooming Products.
I'm doing the intro today, so welcome to Doc Callaghan Unleashed with Joey Villani. And the reason why I'm doing it is I have a very special friend on today that I've known for probably 20 plus years. She was the director of the California School of Pet Grooming. She is the president of the American Professional Pet Groomers Association. I know she's in the education department for groomers with the AKC, and she's an innovator, a mover, and a shaker. So I want to introduce Susan Devine Scholler.
Wow. Thank you, Joey. That was quite an introduction. I appreciate that.
Well, it's all true. I know I'm leaving out a bunch of things, you know, the Russian Terriers, Black Russian Terriers, and more and more and more, but we can get into it. So, Doc, okay. Meet Susan.
Hi, Susan. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We really love to have people that have expertise.
Susan, tell us a little bit about what's going on in your world, in your dog world.
Which aspect of my dog world? Kind of branched out into an octopus here.
Why don't we start with the AKC and the Safe Salon? Maybe you can tell everyone, why you guys have developed this program to the groomers.
We developed the program because there were a lot of issues within the grooming industry of groomers not understanding the safety precautions they need to hold within their salon for their clients, the pets that come into their salon, their employees, and themselves.
So, and again, I know this, but, you know, for our listeners, groomers aren't licensed. And this is something that will kind of make them step up to the plate. So even if we don't get licensing required, this is a safeguard. So when people bring their pets to the grooming salon, that they can have a sense of comfort, correct?
That's correct. And then we have thousands of groomers who have taken this course live in person at the trade shows, as well as on Canine College at the AKC website.
What are some of the things that you guys cover?
We cover a gamut in the time that we've got. At the trade shows, it takes a little over 4 hours to give this whole class. But we cover the safety issues within the salon and for the pets. We go into the diseases that are communicable among the different pets, as well as zoonotic diseases that is the diseases that can transmit from one species to another. And it's amazing how many groomers are not quite aware of that issue, that the dogs they're working on can transmit diseases to them, and they need to be aware of what those are.
Do you cover pet CPR in the salons?
Not in this. I do teach pet CPR. I have three electronic CPR dogs that I did last time I did it was in Florida a year ago. And I carry those with me. I got in a little trouble when I had to fly to Japan with three electronic dogs in my suitcases. They wanted to know when they saw the visual, what's in here when I said dogs. They immediately wanted to go through my suitcase. So, I teach that as well, but just I don't do it at the trade shows. At the trade shows, I'm teaching all about safety. And after my class, I'm at the booth, so I'm there to answer questions for the groomers and get them familiar with the AKC website so they can get onto the classes there.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the pet grooming industry needs to be more unified. Is that
Absolutely.
A better word than regulated? Because like I was telling someone the other day, you want to be a pet groomer, you just get a business license. And then you hang the sign on the door and people come. Is that true?
That is true. That is absolutely what they can do. Fortunately, I see that less and less as the time goes on. Our profession has become much more professional. We have people now who might have started under the wing of somebody else that was training them, or they might have just taken an online course where they didn't get that hands-on experience. However, they're now going out and they're going to all these trade shows and to all the classes that are offered there. and they're learning a great deal in person at those trade shows. So we see the groomers that are out there now have much more cognitive insight to what they need to be paying attention to and learning new techniques and everything as well.
You know, Doc, it's funny that you said something. You said that about the groomers aren't unified.
And correct.
Susan Zotherhat, being the president of the American Professional Pet Groomers Association, that's what that organization is actually up and running to do, is to unify. And Susan, I don't want to take all the words out of your mouth here, but I want to explain a little bit what I think. It's to bring everyone together, the state associations, because most states have grooming associations. And again, there's really no unified governing force. So everyone's running road. Mm-hmm. And what the American Professional Pet Groomers Association is doing is they want to bring all these people together for two reasons. Number one, so they know everything that's going on in the world of grooming nationwide. And so we can work collectively as a group to be able to bring to the table the good things that grooming does and that public recognizes. Now, Susan, I know I didn't really touch on everything there, but am I correct?
Yes, that is correct. The one thing you have to pay attention to with all the different, and you say we should all be on the same page, more or less, is what you said, Doc, is that every state is a sovereign state, and they're all going to have different laws in place. So it's even more important that we unify so that we can be there if something comes up in a state and it's not working with the industry. We are able to put ourselves out there to talk to the legislators and work out something that works for everybody.
I just thought of a great TV show. You know how they do those makeovers for the homes and stuff?
I do.
We could go in across the country and take these grooming right places. Can you imagine what a great show that would be? Joey and I, and we go in and we go, listen, we need to fix this for you, and just fix it, huh? And show, because there is such a need for that.
I pitched that show, and nobody even wanted to hear it. But you know what? That was a long time ago. It's a different world.
Yeah.
But I think.
Matter of fact, it's interesting you say that, Joey, because I pitched it as well to a friend of mine who's an assistant director in Hollywood. And we were ready to do it, and then she had a stroke. So that was kind of taken off the table.
Let me ask you guys a question. How many deaths that are directly related to incompetence on the groomer's part do you think happen across the United States in a year or a month or whatever? What are the statistics on that?
Unfortunately, I don't think you can actually know that, because I find when I'm talking to people where incidences have taken place that nobody bothered to do an autopsy on the animal. And without that, how are we going to know? And I've actually had some owners that were very upset and they couldn't tell me what happened in the salon. So obviously when the animal went to the vet, there was not something obvious.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because there's a law that was on the table in New Jersey called Bijou's Law. Bijou's Law was a dog died under the care of a pet groomer, and no necropsy was done. So they don't know exactly what happened. Now, I spoke to both the pet owner and the groomer. And when I spoke to the pet owner, you hear our story, and the hawk was out to him, because listen, nobody wants to lose a family member, no matter what. It's just not something that you want to happen. And her story was this. Her story was that she went into, and I'm not going to say the name of this other store, she went in there, and the groomer was having a bad day, and she said the groomer said this to her, and then her words were, the groomer said, I hope you have a good dog because I've been having a bad day. Now, when you hear that, the first thing I hear was, oh my God, that's terrible. Why, you know, the person's having a bad day and he's telling the client. That's the last thing that you want to project. When I talked to the groomer said, I did say that, but I didn't say it like that. I said to this person, Because she kept saying to him, my dog's good, my dog's good. And he said, I'm glad you have a good dog because I've been having a bad day. So he was trying to make it like there was light being shed on him that he was going to get to do this good dog after having a day of, and you know how it is when you have bad dogs. So two people said the same thing. Two people's idea of what they said was totally different. And depending on who you listen to, you can very easily draw a picture of if it was good, if it was bad. Either way, it's almost like the Democratic and Republican Party, more or less. You don't know, you know, who's telling, if they're both telling the truth, it's just that there was confusion. But because there was no necropsy done, nobody actually knows. But immediately, the groomers took a lot of heat over it because, mainly because we have an unregulated trade, which I'm for it. And I know a lot of groomers aren't, but it has to be done right. That's the only thing. It really has to be presented right. You cannot give it to a politician and say, okay, run with this. It has to be where it's directed properly. And I think that if we can get politicians and the industry to really work together to put it together, I think the general public would be real happy because they would get everything that they want. They're getting what the professionals need and what they see, and we're getting what the politicians need, and that's to get the people to stop saying, license my groomers. But if we came together, and what Susan is doing, she's pioneering this, probably more than anyone in our industry, between the AKC, between the American Professional Pet Groomers, she's all over the board saying, okay, let's come together, guys.
Well, when I asked what percentage or how many animals die each year from a grooming mishap that could be attributed to the groomer being negligent, if one dog dies because of that, that's too many. Because the sad thing is that, you know, a dog shouldn't die going to have a haircut. You know, the veterinarians, we have malpractice there, right? And such, but it's shameful that we don't have regulation for that because it's unfair to pet owners. So that being said, Susan, I'm a pet owner and I don't want my dog to die at a groomer. What are some things I should do to be able to ensure the safety when I take it to a groomer that I don't know, but maybe the first time or every time?
Well, the first thing I would do is ask that groomer if they're an AKC safe certified salon. Now, they should have their certificate hanging up because that's one of the requirements. Your certificate must be hanging up within the salon. And they can also get their salon certified, which means that somebody shows up for a visit and checks them out. I've done that many, many, many times. So if they start there, they can then have some kind of idea of what the foundation of this person is. And then they should also ask questions of the groomer. I will tell you, years and years ago, and I've been grooming 50 years, a woman came into my grooming salon in San Diego. And I asked her if I could help her. And she said, yes, I just have some questions to ask you. And I went, okay. I said, hold on a moment. And I took the dog off the table, put it back in the crate, closed the crate, and went over to ask the client, you know, to give her the opportunity to go ahead and ask me questions. She said, I don't need to ask you anything. You put that dog away. You didn't turn your back to it. It's little things like that that your clients are going to pay attention to. And until that happened that day, I never thought about it.
Interesting.
I'm going to add to it because I think the groomer also needs to educate the pet owner and let the pet owner know that what we do here is not, you know, it's not like you going to get your hair done in a day of beauty and being pampered. In some cases, some dogs love it. In a lot of cases, some dogs hate it. And I think the general public actually needs to see the good and the bad and do a tour. And say, you know, can I tour your facilities? And even if it's mobile, go in and look around. And the groomer should be explaining every stage of the process, even cutting nails. Because dogs don't, as you know, don't like their nails cut. And they scream. If I go to the veterinarian and the dog is screaming to cut their nails, nobody thinks anything. If I go to the groomer and the dog is screaming, cutting its nails, they think that the groomer is doing something wrong. But I think it's up to the groomer at that point to explain the whole nail cutting process and how important it is to have short nails because of the damage that it does. Now, that's just one aspect. But if your groomer's not doing it, then ask them. Say, can I tour? Can you show? And you know what? If they have something to hide, they're not going to let you in. If they don't, they're going to welcome you with open arms. And, you know, my tour is 15 minutes long. I go through everything from my hydraulic tables to how I loop the dog up and secure them to the table and the process of the dryers and the products we use and how we dump out our diluted products every day so nothing grows in them and your dogs don't get no back. And I give them that. Now, the only thing that I think sometimes is a crapshoot is when you get the elderly dogs that you've been grooming from puppy and now they're 12, 13, 14 years old. And I think that that's the hardest point that for a groomer to recognize, we can't be doing this anymore. Maybe you should go to a groomer that has a veterinarian on a facility, because you just turn on a high velocity dryer and the noise level to an older dog and a dog you were doing the whole time, all of a sudden you'll see a dog start convulsing. And at that point, the process should stop. It should end right there. And I think a lot of groomers feel, well, if I don't do it, it's not going to get done. And they push it to the next point, never wanting anything bad to happen, you know, thinking they're doing the right thing. And the next thing you know is you're dealing with a dog that now you have a problem. You have a problem. You have a dog that's convulsing. You have a dog that's dying in front of you. And if you don't know how to get resuscitated at that point, you can have a serious problem. And I think that that's a big part of where the groomers have to themselves just be adamant. Tell Mr. Jones, I'm looking at Fluffy today. Fluffy's not right, Mr. Jones. You know, I don't think we should be grooming her anymore. And because I think that is more of what you see. The other part of the problem is hiring incompetent labor. And they like to do that in the bathing part. The bathing part, that's why you see most of these incidents that happen. They happen during bathing and drying. And a lot of it's because they're looking for low-end labor. And a dog washer is not a dog washer. To be honest with you, my bathers in my salon, I cherish more than my groomers. Right, Susan?
Yes.
I mean, because they're the workhorse. They're making your dogs clean. They're getting it to the point where you can do that beautiful haircut. My bird is agreeing with me, as you can hear. So I think that's the other thing, and I think that's the most important part, is ask the questions of the people who are washing my dogs. Who are they? Who are they, and how did you select? Find out. Ask those questions.
Whenever I hired them, they were always hired on a trial basis, so they didn't think they had a job forever. They had to know they better listen, they better learn it, and do it properly. And they better love animals, because if you don't love animals, you're not going to handle them correctly.
Susan, from your state originally, she was she had the California School of Pet Grooming, and she could tell you. I mean, California was probably one of the more stricter locations, you know, for pet groomers. And you guys tried to assemble the groomers for licensing a few times, correct, Susan?
No, we didn't. But that's where it became evident that if we didn't start working on it, we were going to have some really bad regulations, because it was people who knew nothing about the industry that was proposing this to the state legislators. And I do not know why, but the legislators tend to not want to call the people who are actually experienced in the industry. I did have a senator call me at the school once, and he wanted to know if I would support this new bill he had. And I said, this kind of clued him in. I said, as written. and he said, you have issues with it? And I already had the list down, because I knew I was president of the California Federation of Dog Clubs then. And I knew I had to go up to Sacramento to speak about this bill. So I already had my list made out, and I went down the list. And he pulled the bill the next week.
Lovely. Hey, I wanted to ask you guys a question about anal glands and plucking the hair out of the ears. So 35 years ago, I graduated from vet school, and it was pretty standard that groomers plucked the hair out of the ears and they did the anal glands. Nowadays, I don't think either one of those are being done on a regular basis. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. I don't know why, but apparently a lot of the vets in the areas are telling the groomers not to do it. Now, if you don't get the hair out of the ears, that's going to open up ear infections. It'll become chronic ear infections eventually. And the anal glands can become an issue as well. However, I do tell groomers or my students or anybody that asks that when you do it, if you get much resistance, don't push it because they could have an impacted anal gland. And that's when you refer them to their veterinarian.
So are most groomers, it's legal for groomers to go ahead and express a dog's anal glands as long as the owner is made aware of that or?
No, most of them assume we're doing it.
Okay.
Most of them do assume that you're doing it. And it's funny because I always do anal glands. Anal glands, I express, like Susan said, if it doesn't express easy, I'll refer to the veterinarian because I think that I've seen dogs that come in every 6 weeks and they're packed. They need them released. Mm-hmm. And the owner would have no clue.
Right.
The other thing though, with ears, my whole ear theory has changed. And it was mainly over my veterinarians because we used to pluck, almost every dog's ears except for certain breeds that you couldn't. And like Susan said, you don't fight with it. They're not going to let you then recommend the veterinarian.
Right.
Now my viewpoint has, if it's a healthy ear and it's not like overabundance amount of hair in the dog's ear, I kind of leave it alone and just swab it out, get the wax out and stuff. But I don't pluck anymore. And that was only because the viewpoint from veterinarians had changed, at least in my area, was saying, you know what, if it's a healthy ear, leave it alone because you can irritate it and then it can become infected. So that has been my new viewpoint on that.
And I have never had a dog get an ear infection from doing ears, ever.
But it may be the way you're doing it, Susan.
It could very well be because, first of all, I kind of like the dog. I kind of let the dog pick the technique they prefer. And I find they all have different likes and dislikes on it. And once I find out what that dog likes, that's the way I do it for that dog. And then I'll just kind of pull them out until I get all those hairs out. And so they're nice. The air can get in there and help keep those ears cleaner.
Yes. And there has been, like Joey's saying, in the veterinary community, we've been educated from the so-called dermatology experts not to pluck the hair if it's not causing a problem, because if it's done incorrectly, you will make a problem where there isn't one. So I think that's what you're saying.
Well, yeah. I think a big part of the problem is also disinfecting the equipment that you're using, which I know Susan is going to do that. But if I'm using hemostats and I'm going from ear to ear to ear and I don't disinfect it once, and I'm plucking out that hair and I'm not cleaning it, so everything that was in that dirty dog's ear with a little bit of an infection, now I just put in the next dog's ear. And I think that's a big part of the problem as well. Is, safety and sanitation is just such an important part of it. Now with COVID, I think that awareness really got raised. That's one good thing that came out of this, at least in the grooming industry. But I think that's where that lies.
And I take that even one step further. When I'm working on a dog, I pluck one ear. I do not use the same tool to clean the other ear. I get one that's been disinfected, and I use, we have in the grooming industry, UVC ovens that is made for our industry, and I use that, and that kills 99.9% of all bacteria on our tools.
And Susan, do you groom cats?
I have. I don't now.
Oh, you don't now?
I don't now.
Tell us why.
Where I am now, most of the people who call for their cats to be bathed or shaved or whatever they want, they are cats that maybe most of them have never been groomed before, and they're well into their adulthood, and I'm likely to get nailed by a cat that's not used to being groomed at all. I'd rather get a kitten and start training it just like I would a puppy than somebody bring me a 3 or 4 year old cat that's never been groomed. So that's basically why I finally said I'm done, because with us groomers, there's so many things that can happen. We can get cat scratch fever. You know, you get a bite and it just goes into an infection immediately. And if it gets into the lymph node system, that bacteria, you can lose some of your lymph nodes, and that can damage some of your immune system.
So you mentioned something that I thought we should touch on about puppies. So when do you advise a pet owner to have the puppy go to the groomer for the first time? At what age do you or Joey do that?
Depends on the breed and when they first get their puppy and they call me and ask me about it, I'll tell them we don't want to see them until after their second vaccination. And then when they come in, I recommend they not come in the first time for the grooming appointment. I recommend they just come in and chat with me a minute with the puppy there so the puppy's used to the facility. And then they can set their appointment and bring them back for the next time. And it's usually a longer appointment because I like to gradually take puppies into it. So it's not something they do not like the rest of their life.
So like around 12 weeks of age, you have them start getting them used to going to the groomer?
That's about right. I've got a 3-month-old puppy right now that she's fighting me on it. And she weighs 40 pounds.
Oh, yeah.
3 months and 40 pounds. You can tell what she's going to be.
And Joey, what about you? What do you recommend to new pet owners?
It was exactly the same thing. The only thing that we do differently is we wait until that second booster shot, and then we bring them in and we do the grooming that day. But the process is first is we actually have the pet owner there with the dog, and come in the back, and again, it's that whole introduction period, and then it's the easy, you know, transition of power where the pet owner now gives the groomer turns over the power to the groomer, and that's the only thing that we do differently. But the process is longer because puppies, you got to work with them. You can't force the grooming. You can't. And again, that's another thing that people need to know. The first experience could be the worst haircut your dog ever sees in its life, and the dog can come out looking worse than going in. But that's the process of it, unfortunately. If I force it for the dog to get a beautiful haircut, but he hates grooming, well, then I just created a mess for the next, you know, 10, 12, 13, 14 years, because they're always going to hate it. They're going to relate it to me. They're going to see my face and say, uh-oh. There's that bad man that, you know, that's forcing me to do things I don't like. So it's the process is longer and it doesn't always come out perfect. But that's, again, that all needs to happen in the orientation phase of the grooming.
Pet owners could do a lot to help their puppies by starting to work with their feet.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, Susan, what pet puppy owners should be doing.
So if I have that opportunity to talk to them as soon as they get that puppy, I will tell them to have some treats handy, sit down on the floor or in a chair, whatever comfortable for them and the dog, and play with those feet and give them a little treat when they're being good about it. If they're fighting about it, lighten up on it and then start again, but give them the treat when they really start accepting it, and you will get them adjusted to it pretty quick.
I mean, every week I have a pet come in with a broken nail, and more since COVID, because the pets are not going to the groomers. The groomers were not available. And so now all the nails are long, the nail veins grown. And every week I have to sedate a dog. There's a $500 bill and remove the torn nail. I mean, it's horrible.
Yeah, it's very important that we educate the clients to the importance of having those nails done regularly. And when I have clients come in whose the dog's nails are way too long, I will tell them, you know, even if you don't need an appointment, give me a call, run them over, get the nails done. Won't take long, and it's better on the dog's feet, certainly better on their health, because they can develop arthritis with those nails getting too long.
And people don't realize some pets don't wear their nails because of the way they stand. They just don't wear them down at all, or they don't walk on surfaces that wear them down.
That are going to wear them down. That's correct. Yes.
You know, Susan, I have a question. Now, I am, with me, when I adopt them, I like breeds, but I usually go to rescues or shelters and try to adopt that way. But my question is, okay, so now let's say somebody wants a specific breed, okay? For instance, because I'm a Karen Terrier guy, let's say Karen Terrier.
Okay, I got those.
But I've never owned them before. How much does selective breeding into that breed, because we know they were ratters, we know they're active, how important is that to that comes into play that the average pet owner needs to know? I mean, does it really affect the temperament? Does it? I mean, is it selective breeding bred out of them these days, or is it still something that people should know before they purchase any of these breeds?
Do you want to go to a good breeder who's doing everything they need to do? They're breeding good, healthy stock that has good temperaments right up front. And these days, I tell people, you know, go to the akc.org website and go to the breeds that you're interested in, and it'll direct you eventually to their homepage, their website for that breed. And you can look up, but make sure that you're buying from a breeder that's doing all the genetic testing. These days, we have too many tests available so that we can avoid genetic problems in our breedings, and our puppy buyers are able to be assured that they've got a good, healthy dog. Yeah. And that's so very important. And then when we get some of these dogs, the doodles that are mixed with everything under the sun now, what has happened when those people do that is they've made it impossible for, if somebody's going to breed those mixed breeds, you're not going to be able to do the same testing, because the issues are going to be located possibly on a different gene location. So it's really important if you do that. Now, if they're looking just to adopt a pet from a shelter, and I used to groom a lot in the San Diego area for the county shelter, they'd bring them over to the school. If it was all possible, I would try to put a pattern on them and get them brushed out so that they looked good, they were going to be adopted, but that the clients were aware this was not a short-haired dog. Know what you're buying. This dog is going to have a long coat, and you have to know how to maintain it. So I, when they're getting shelter dogs, I think it's really important that they become somewhat familiar with what is possibly behind that dog. And if you have allergies in the household, they need to be aware of that and what dogs are the best for those allergies. Karen Terriers is a great one for people who have allergies. So, and I have a Black Russian Terrier puppy now, and that's as well a good breed for that. But a lot of your terrier breeds are very good for that. Poodles are good for it. Bichons are good for it. But just because somebody has a golden doodle or a labradoodle does not mean that dog's going to be hyperallergenic. They're only going to be hyperallergenic if they genetically carry that poodle coat.
Yes, because people are reacting to a protein in their saliva, and people don't realize that. The true hypoallergenic dog, it is genetics. There's cats that are hypoallergenic too, but it goes back to the genetics of the dog. Well, yeah. Susan, we could talk to you forever. It's been such a joy to have you on. You're such a wealth of knowledge. And if groomers are listening and they want to get that certification, how do they go about doing that?
They can go to the akc.org canine college And there is a list. They have classes there for breeders, groomers, trainers. They can go on there, go to the groomer one and pick that so that, you know, all the groomers that are grooming can go in there and get themselves certified as well. And if they want to do their salon at the same time, they just need to make sure that they pick the salon course so that it takes them on into getting their salon certified too.
How do they find out about the American Professional Pet Groomers Association? Because I think that's important to know.
The American Professional Pet Groomers Association is APPGA.org, and their website is up. So they can go there. We're going to start putting a section on this year that owners are going to be able to go on there and kind of keep up with what's going on, and even a blog for them so that they can view some of the things that they're noticing or questions that they have, so that we can open it up to our groomers as well as the general public so we can educate and work with both sides. If they go to the AKC marketplace, they can look up groomers and see if there are any in their area that are certified. But let me tell you, that's, you'll find the salons there. Not, I don't think many of the groomers are going up there. Yeah. So, and so they would be limited on how many they're going to find that way. We are working on a map on the APPGA website. So, and it's going to be voluntary for our groomers and our salons to put their own information up there, because we don't want to be putting their information out. But when that happens, then they can put it out, and these people will be able to go there and look at that map and see what they have in their area. And we have a lot of good groomers in this organization to be able to help the owners with their pets.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again for coming on. And if you have questions for any information we talked about today, go to docandjoeyunleashed@gmail.com, docandjoeyunleashed@gmail.com, and follow me on Instagram at Doc Halligan. And we just love doing these podcasts. We're hoping to that we really make a difference for pet owners out there.
Thank you, Doc. And I sure enjoyed it. I always enjoy a conversation with Joey.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.